You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey everyone, so today's podcast episode is something different than what we normally publish. It's actually a recording of a Facebook Live that we did earlier this morning of a new segment we started called the Ask Charles Show. And the background on this is when Charles was on the Bigger Pockets podcast last month, he has been inundated with emails, text messages, and phone calls from investors all around the country. So he's loved it, but he literally cannot keep up with everyone reaching out for questions and answers. And we had this idea of starting a show since so many of the questions were similar to each other and we can always learn from other investors and other people asking questions. We decided, hey, let's start a show called the Ask Charles Show. We'll do a few episodes and we'll see how it goes. So today's podcast episode is a recording of the second Ask Charles Show that we did. And we went through, I think, about five or six questions from investors, some in Denver and some from all around the country. But hopefully you can get some good information from the answers that Charles provides. So if you want to see future episodes, check out the Facebook page. I'll put a link in the show notes or go to Facebook and search for Chris Lopez and Charles Roberts. Our Facebook page will pop up. And something else I would appreciate, once you listen to the show, shoot me an email, shoot me a text message, hit me up on Facebook, and let me know if you like the fact that I'm posting the recording from the Ask Charles Show to the podcast channel. I'm very interested in people's feedback to see if it's something that is adding value. So again, just reach out, let me know. Here is the show. Enjoy. Hey, good morning, everyone. Chris Lopez here, and I got Charles Roberts with me for the second Ask Charles Show. So first question for you, Charles, jumping into it. Hi, Charles. Hey. I have been using the spreadsheet analysis tool off the website. I have a question. There's a section for repairs, but nothing for capital expenditures or CapEx. You know, the larger repairs for roofing, appliances, etc. So on Bigger Pockets, they talk a lot about making sure you include CapEx expenses each month. What are your thoughts and why is it not included on the sheet?
So it actually is included on the sheet. I think it's line 45 on the spreadsheet we use that was put together by Joe Massey, and it's called repairs and maintenance. So it depends how much you want to disassociate, say, current repairs or turnover, tenant turnover type of repairs from capital expenses. So from an IRS perspective, talk to your accountant, they might be two different things. So cleaning the kitchen might be an expense that you would expense that year, whereas a new roof would be a capital expense, and that would be something amortized over the life of that expense. From our perspective, we just want to actually put some reserves away. So we just put it in the repairs and maintenance. And we usually say somewhere between, you know, 6 and 10%, call it 8% of gross rents for a typical property you would want to put away. But that would be including both the normal everyday expenses as well as a reserve account for capital expenses. That's the way we do it in our spreadsheet.
And something I think it's important to keep in mind, I mean, Bigger Pockets is a great resource, but it's a nationwide platform. So if someone's analyzing properties in Memphis, Tennessee, or another market where property values are much less and rents are much less than Denver, I mean, it's going to be a different percentage to build a new roof on a $40,000 house than it is on a $300,000 house here in Denver, right? How do you factor that into the spreadsheet?
Well, know what you're doing. I mean, basically, that's what you have to factor is the spreadsheet is a part of the solution, but just a part of it, actually knowing what you're doing and or working with people who understand what they're doing in your market, of course, is critical. So you're right. As a percentage, say a roof might be roughly the same cost in different areas of the country, but of course the rents will be very different. So the percentages might be higher in your example. What's important to understand is there's an apples and oranges thing with that question. From a tax perspective, capital expenses are taxed and amortized differently than normal everyday expenses. From our purposes for this spreadsheet, we just want to make sure that some enough money is being put away into reserves that cover both of those accounts.
Great. And you said usually it's between 5 and 8%, right? For the repairs line?
Kind of what we say. So anybody who's ever always hears us sort of throw our hands up in the air and say, yeah, you know, it's whatever you think is going to make sense. Talk to someone who's done it for 20 years and they'll say the same thing. It's always the newbie who says, yeah, put away 7.2%. That's exactly what you need to do. And it's the people who've done it for 30 years who go, I don't know. I don't keep a count. I just have enough money in there that I can always cover stuff. Probably the answer is somewhere in between. Our best guess for a typical property is 6, 8, 10%. But it's important to understand a couple things. Let's say you buy a brand new property. Well, you might have a lower reserve fund than if you buy a 1924 triplex that's leaning over, right? All of these things can be taken into account. Another thing is, let's say you're really handy and you're actually going to be doing the work yourself. Then you might have a different set of out-of-pocket expenses if you're not really handy. So that's where you need to bring your situation, your market, your abilities, your property to bear.
And also, I mean, if you use 5%, it's not 5% real. It could be 0%, 1%, 1%. Then year four, the roof blows off, the water heater breaks and floods something, and then you're at 30% that year. I mean,
and it'll always be that way. Yeah.
So keep that in mind, Brandon, for this question. Charles, next question. So Adrian, here local in the Denver market, says, so I'm looking to get into property investing here. Denver, is $20,000 to $30,000 cash enough to start investing, or is a laughably low amount and we should just stick to our goal and continue to save and hold, save more money to buy more property in the future?
Okay, well, I won't go laughably, right? Like, I'm not going to laugh, but I am going to say that's going to be really tight. So let's stretch it to 30,000. And let's say you're buying a normal investment property at 20% down. That would get you to $150,000 property, but you're also going to need some reserves. So what it means is you would probably need to buy in the range of 120,000, which is still possible in our market. Some one bedrooms, it is possible. As a matter of fact, send us an email. I'll send you just a quick, MLS listings of all properties under 125,000 in the Denver metro area. It's a really easy thing to do. It doesn't mean that's exactly what you should do, but it means that you can do it. I would direct the question though this way. You should go talk to a lender. Go talk to three lenders. Go talk to some people and have them understand what you're doing. They're not going to charge you for this. They will probably want to run your credit, or one of them will want to run your credit. And my advice is let them run your credit. Until you know what you can do, you don't really have the basis for beginning to answer questions like this. So that's a couple of things. One is, can you do it in Denver? Potentially, if you push it to the 30,000, and we'd be happy to just flip you out some properties so you can see what's out there. And quickly, number two is talk to a few lenders. Send an email to Chris or me, and we'd be happy to just forward some lenders that we work with. We get nothing from it. We just know lots of really good people, and we'd be happy to have you talk to them. Spend the time talking to some lenders and see what you might be able to do. And if you really can't do anything realistic in our market now, at least begin building a plan like you're absolutely doing to be able to do something in the future.
And what about, I mean, so we talked about straight investment property using the 20% down model. I mean, another model we have some clients using is the house hacking or nomad style, where they can buy a house for 3.5% down or 5% down, live in it for a year or two, whether renting out to tenants or just live there, then move out in a year or two after that. How would you factor that into the advice you give?
Well, it's perfect. So what was her name again?
Adrian.
Adrian. So Adrian, for example, if you're renting right now, maybe what you want to do is buy a two-bedroom condo, you know, in a nice area of Denver Southeast or maybe Lakewood or Aurora South. Maybe you'll pay $150,000, $160,000 for it. You could put 5% down, so you've got plenty of cash to do that if you are what we call warrantable, if you can actually get a loan. And you could buy a property and then maybe you rent out the room for the other bedroom for $750 a month. You do the numbers. That is absolutely investing in real estate. That is probably the best, most likely way you could begin to do it if you don't currently own a home and or if you want to buy another place and live with tenants. It's something that we talk a lot about. Our clients do it. It's a terrific way of doing it, of building up wealth and investing in real estate if you're willing to live with folks. Now, you don't have enough money to buy a duplex or a multi-unit, so you would actually be living with someone. But we have clients who, Chris referred to the nomad strategy, where, you know, you're a nomad. Basically, every year or so, you buy another house to live in, put 3, 3.5, 5, whatever percent down, and then you move, and then you buy another house. And that's how you can build up wealth and build up a portfolio of properties with a really limited amount of money to put down.
Great. So next question here, Charles, keep you in the hot seat. Mandy, and I think she's out of the Denver market, said, Charles, my husband and I have been saving up to buy a duplex for a little over a year now, and we are just about at the point that we could actually do it. I was wondering what your thoughts are on whether or not it would be worth to pay a 3% down payment, or should we keep saving until we can put a little bit more down? What do you think?
So presumably she's talking about living there, right?
I would assume with a 3% down, yeah.
Right. You know, it's a good question that I can't answer because I don't know enough. Like if I'm trying to sell you a duplex, I'd say, great, put 3% down, sign here. But there's a lot more that goes into the story is, do you have additional money? Do you want to live in the duplex? Are you talking about a house hacking strategy where you're living in half of it? What other reserves do you have? I would definitely invite you to give us a call or, you know, just send us an email, talk a little bit more about it. And once again, similar to the advice I gave to the last lady, you'll want to talk to a lender. So it's not a black or white answer. It's very, very much a gray answer. But understanding a little more about what you're looking to do, about what you bring to the table, and what your goals are can help you decide what the right answer is. I would just need to know more, but it's very, very important to understand that it's not binary. It's a process of you thinking through your long-term, mid to long-term strategy of what you're trying to do and then applying your situation to that by using, you know, professionals. And I really, really, really start with the lenders. Find a lender that can help you figure the money out. And we'd be more than happy to chat with you about some of the options you'd have from the real estate perspective.
Great. Next question from Clint. Says, I'm currently trying to sell my house. I have just about $100,000 in equity, but I've not had any luck or takers yet. So I've got some debt. My debt to income ratio is horrible. And I'm thinking of doing something else like this. Take my house off the market, rent it out, and I'll be at a negative $100 to $200 a month in cash flow because I can't get the rent to cover the mortgage. Pull a home equity line of credit, move my family into a large toy hauler RV, and then purchase a duplex with 20% down and rent it out. I don't think I'll make much, if any, money, but is it worth my time to attempt this? Because then I'll have two properties, my house and my duplex. And what are some of the advantages of doing this?
So, Chris, back to you. You want to jump on that one first, and then I'll fill in some blanks.
I mean, there's a lot going on here. It's a very interesting scenario. And my initial gut is I would agree with what you were just talking about in the previous one and say there's a lot more variables in here to really give you any significant advice. I mean, not knowing, you know, the overall cash reserves, the personal finances,
and the future of marriage status after 2 weeks of this.
Our wife and two kids going to be happy living in a RV? I know that would not be an option for me. So, I mean, a lot of it just depends on there.
I mean, one way of looking at it would be that you don't want to sell it for less than you want. Now, I'm going to give you the harsh reality that we've all gone through. Apparently, it's overpriced. I mean, I'm assuming you're marketing it professionally, that like people know it's on the market. You're doing what needs to get done to sell it. And if you are and it hasn't sold yet, it's probably simply overpriced in our market. And I'm assuming you're in Denver, but whatever market, that's probably what it is. So one of the options would be to reduce the price, but I don't think you want to do that. Another would be to do exactly what you're saying and then potentially build wealth over time, you know, as appreciation continues. But like Chris says, I mean, there's a lot going on there. And I would think, you know, less than half of it is about the real estate, and part is a lot of it's about your life. And, you know, I don't know what school district will your kids be in if you're in an RV? Like, I literally don't quite understand how that would work, but I assume it does. But I'd be definitely curious to talk more about it because I love new questions. That one's a new one.
And something else, as I'm rereading the question here, he mentioned his debt to income ratio is not great. If your DTI is not great, are you going to be able to buy a duplex depending on what your DTI is? I can answer that question. I mean, obviously a lender can, but that would be something I'd want to get figured out ASAP. So going back to one of your favorite phrases, Charles, talk to a lender sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and I'd be horrified if you think your DTI isn't good, but you haven't talked to a professional. Believe me, there's no way for a layman to actually understand the fairly complex composition of the debt to income ratio. You just got to talk to a lender. And again, they don't charge you. I mean, they want your business. They want to work with you and for you. But make sure you have talked to a lender. If you actually have and your DTI is above 50 or something, then you're just not able to buy. And that means, it does limit your choices for sure.
All right. So next question here from Seth. Sorry, this question is a little choppy here. So I've really enjoyed how you described the boring way to build real estate. He's referring to your Bigger Pockets interview, I'm assuming, and that no smarts can make up for it. And it's just pure grit and hard work, 90-hour plus weeks. This is something I've come to learn as well. I have a follow-up question. I also think that one of the keys in real estate is financing. If I can provide financing, I don't have to spend countless hours looking for the deal of the year, air quotes. Could you provide some tips on best practices that you have learned from your time as a private lender and what you've learned about the financing world?
So just so you know, I've never been a private lender. I've actually been like a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, like a loan officer kind of thing. So I guess I'm not sure what you mean by private lender, but I've been a lender and it really, so he's asking about tips to understand the lending process.
Yes. Just the overall financing process.
Yeah. You know, there are lots of books on it and I would say maybe read one, but don't spend the next 9 months reading every book about lending. Just, learn a little bit about the process. And then most importantly, get referrals for 3 or 4 or 5 local loan people, maybe a couple of loan officers, maybe a credit unions. Credit unions tend to be great if you can be a member of a credit union. Talk to several different lenders. If you're in the Denver market, we'd be happy to refer you to some lenders that we know and like and trust that are very good and sit with them for an hour. You don't have to be a genius to understand it. You just need to work with someone who has spent 10,000 hours learning this and knows how to explain it to you, and then come with a long list of questions. And they'll pretty much have heard every single question you're going to ask. I'm telling you, after an hour talking to a really good lender, I think you're going to be steps above where you are right now. That's what I advise to everybody.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm actually going through this process right now, or slowly going through the last couple of weeks. I'm in the process of exploring refinance options for a property owned in Reno, Nevada. I got like 20% loan to value. So a ton of money I could pull out, or I may sell it. So I'm talking to lenders out there in Nevada. I'm also talking to lenders out here in Denver, because I got to make sure if I pull money out of there, great. Now I've got all this money. Can I still buy properties and finance that here in Denver? So I'm talking to lenders on both sides. So I've called around to, I think at this point, 7 lenders in Reno. Some have been what Charles was saying, the traditional conventional lenders like the Fannie Mae style. And I can tell you, if you call them up, hey, have a basic idea about what your loan to value ratio is. Have a basic idea about what your, income is and your other debts. And they can give you a really quick, back napkin math. Yeah, there's potential here. Let's run the credit. Or, hey, you know what? There's some issues here we need to dig down further into. And so I'm actually talking to credit unions out there in Reno now, as Charles said, because they've usually got some more flexibility. So I'm talking to credit unions because they don't have the same terms necessarily that the Fannie Mae loans do, where they have to sell it on the bond market. They can hold the loan themselves and have more flexibility on what they can loan on and some different options there. So I'm talking to them now to see what my options are. And on the Denver side, I've talked to a conventional lender and I've also talked to a local credit union. Again, I'm getting people from both sets of the world to see what my options are and what my rates are. So I'm doing exactly what Charles has advised. I'm doing the same thing I advise all of my clients as well, which is make a lot of phone calls, ask for referrals. And 3 or 4 of the lenders I talked to in Reno, definitely not a fit. No idea about the investing side of the world, which is fine. But I knew, had a polite short conversation, asked for referrals, usually got none, and then moved on to the next person. And I found them out by Googling things. That's one of my favorite things in the world is I just sit there and I Google it. and I Googled different phrases, Reno lenders or Reno Nevada lenders, Reno Nevada credit unions, Reno Nevada investment property refinance, Google, 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 Google. Now here in Denver, I've got a network of people I can just pick up the phone and call. But if you're in Denver, Charles and I are happy to pass along some contacts for lenders as well. So you got any input on?
That's perfect. I couldn't have said it better myself. Just do the research, talk to a few lenders. That takes you there.
And I will be, as I'm slowly going through this process, I've got a few other things that are priority right now than figuring out the financing side. But as I figure out the pieces, I'm going to write a detailed blog post. I'll do a couple podcasts or webinar on there discussing the financing options, what I saw, conventional portfolio, renting versus or refinancing versus selling, and how everything's playing on both sides. So it can be a good case study for other people to use out there as well. All right, Charles. Well, that is the last of the questions for this morning.
Great. Awesome. Thanks so much. Really fun.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I appreciate you joining us live. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody.